Recorded live in the Phantasmo Lounge, high atop the Stanley Lieber Building in beautiful Midtown Portsmouth, Virginia, it's Phantasmo After Dark with your host, Rob Floyd, and special guest co-host, Professor Sam Batman. And our topic tonight, superhero movies. Why they change things, and are they still doing it for the same reasons? So, welcome to the old podcast, everybody, and thanks for joining us tonight, Sam.
Well, no problem. Thanks for having me.
And for everybody's info here, we always give everybody like kind of a nickname or a preface to their name. And tonight, I said professor, and Sam actually is a professor, so that's kind of cool. Clayton was on here. I had Clayton on. He was Dr. Clayton Sayer.
I heard that.
Because I've just always called him doctor in you know, slang and jest and stuff. But we have an honest-to-God, real intelligent professor on tonight. So
now you're saying it.
Just trying to give the podcast a little, you know, a little clout there,
a little
sophistication, yeah. But anyway, now, Sam and I have known each other for quite a few years, and we don't get to see each other as much as we should or would like to, and we've just spent the whole hour or so before recording this talking about comics and comic movies, so hopefully we've got some stuff left. And
oh, there's always more.
Oh, yeah.
We'll spend 2 hours on Cave Carson if we have to.
Well, you know, there you go. Cave Carson, Jesus.
Oh, God. Okay, when Stallone did that movie where he was trapped in the subway tunnel in New York.
Yeah, he was Cave Carson. Okay.
Cave Carson.
Okay, that's another one. We'll have to do episodes. Superhero movies that weren't superhero movies. Because, you know, we did one on Assault on Precinct 13, which mm-hmm. was the best non-zombie movie ever made.
Oh, absolutely.
So we'll have to do one on best non-superhero movies. That'd be pretty cool.
I wanted to see Indiana Jones jetpack whiz off the planet land so he could really meet Adam Strange.
That would be awesome.
Well, not now. I don't want that to be the plot of it.
Oh, no, but I would have gone to watch that before, you know.
Oh, it would have had to have been better than Crystal Skull.
I hear tell they're making a fifth one. Or next, or another one, whatever number it's on now.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones and the old folks home. You know, I don't know. Maybe he'll team up with Bubba Hotep or something.
Oh, that almost wouldn't get worth it.
You know? But man, but tonight, the topic, because we're going to keep doing that. I know we're going to go off and come back and go off and come back. And it's expected, so it's cool. But superhero movies, even from the get-go, they've changed things from the page to the screen, and they do it a lot these days. And the reason most often given is, well, to ground it more in reality or to make it more realistic. And my argument to that is, it's a comic book movie. It doesn't take place in the real world. It takes place in the comic book world. So you can give a little more, which they don't. It's like the trend now is everything's about to be gritty and realistic. Whereas I think in the previous decades when they did stuff, it was more of a budgetary thing and didn't have the technology as opposed to trying to be realistic. Because what were you saying before, when we were talking before, the first superhero serial, the first live-action hero on the screen was Captain Marvel, right?
It's also regarded as the best. So,
yeah.
You know, you shoot your whole wad in 1941 and you go downhill for 50 years.
And it was. It's a good serial. I mean, I've got it. It's right over there on the shelf. For for the time it was made and what technology they had to work with, it's really good and really faithful to the book.
Because, like you said, limitations are technology for the effects and in the time allotted to make this thing. And I don't know what the shooting schedule was for these serials, but you're talking, what, 12 chapters, a thing worth, what, 3.5 hours?
Yeah, it was pretty quick, the quick filming schedule on those, because they were knocking those out left and right, Columbia and Republic and the other studios that made them.
And yet it doesn't look bad. It's the later serials, I guess, where the well was going dry. Captain America in 1944?
Yeah.
Which rumor has it was supposed to be Spy Smasher or Mr. Scarlet or one of those other Fawcett characters.
Oh, wow.
Minute.
Yeah.
And he just got slotted into somebody else's story, and it's just a standard adventure story. He doesn't even need the costume to be Captain America. It's that
unwritten. Yeah, it could have been, you know, a detective guy, yeah. You know. And the cost in that, that's one of the first times where the costume, it was changed quite a bit from the comic book. Mm-hmm. And there is a story behind that, why, and I can't remember it right now. Except for Captain America, all the other ones that came out at that time pretty much looked just like the book. Mm-hmm. Captain Marvel looked great. The only limitations they had for his stuff when he was the flying scenes for like long distance and flying across the sky, they had a dummy downsized that on a wire that if you know that's what it is, okay, you can spot it. But at just a glance, it looks pretty good. It's not that cheesy. And like I said, you have to watch these things in the context of when they were made, you know, to really enjoy them. Unlike the Superman serial that came out a few years later.
Yes.
When he would take off to fly, it would switch to animation.
Yes.
Which was, it was really cheesy, but it was a way to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and other than that, everything else, but he looked like Superman on screen. Yes. Looked just like Superman.
That was Kirk Allen, right?
Yeah, he was in the serials, yeah. And I think did they do two serials?
They did Superman. Two. I've got them right here in front of me.
Oh, okay.
The sneak purchase from Amazon, heading around and watched them before we did this podcast.
But, cool.
The first one was in 1948, and the second one was in 1950. That's Adam Man versus Superman. The third movie was a pilot floated for the TV show with George Reeves.
And that was the Mole Men, right?
Yes. And
yeah.
That was eventually broken up as a two-part episode on the TV show.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Technically, three Superman movies before Chris Reeve ever put the suit on.
Yeah, and they were faithful to the source material.
Mm-hmm.
Little things that were changed were so minute that it didn't, you know, it didn't take away from it, didn't make any sense. And you know, my big thing, everybody that knows me, I always harp on the costume issue, but it's a visual medium. Film is a visual medium. Comic books are a visual medium. So
correct.
To me, at a glance, if you can't recognize who the character is at a glance, it's a total fail. If mm-hmm. out of the corner of your eye, you see it and go, hey, whoa, it was Superman, and it makes you turn around. It succeeds. In these early ones, they look just like the book. Man, there were others, too, that were really, you know, pretty good. I mean, there was a Spy Smasher one, I believe.
Yeah.
What's that?
I was going to say, but you know, either Adventures of Captain Marvel or Spy Smasher, they go back and forth as being the best or second best.
It was good stuff back then, you know. And that's why, I think like we had talked about, Captain Marvel was outselling Superman. But DC had better, or National, had better lawyers. So
yes.
They got them to put the kibosh on the big red cheese, and Superman became the top dog in the comics.
Yeah, there are a lot of these serials, I guess, if you limit yourself to comic superheroes, you've got Batman in 43, mm-hmm. Captain America in 44, Superman in 48, and then, you know, because most of the other stuff was Zorro or the Shadow.
Yeah, well, you had the Phantom. And the Green Hornet.
Correct.
And they both, well, Green Hornet, you could say, was, he was a radio show and a comic book. But the Phantom, I believe, it was in, like, newspaper strips and then had a comic. And the Phantom serial's pretty good. It's pretty faithful. You know, like I said, barring technology and budgetary limitations, it looks like the character. And
right.
He did the things the character and acted like the character was supposed to. And the Green Hornet the same way.
Well, and you'd think, dealing with realism, characters like that should have been the easiest to do.
Uh-huh.
Superman and Captain Marvel, you've got to fly. You've got to demonstrate super strength. There's so many ways to do that with the technological time. You use wire work to pick up one end of a car in really slow-mo gun. You bend up, or you throw something that's supposed to look heavy, like an engine block, but really isn't.
Yeah.
Okay. Smashing through a wall. So you've only got so many different ways to do that. But with a character like Batman or Captain America or Spot-Masher, you don't even have to do it all fisticuffs, right?
Yeah, you just have to get out there and mix it up.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the Batman's gadgets and, like, the car and stuff,
right.
You know, which they kind of just didn't do that stuff.
Apparently the Batmobile in 43 or 49, whichever it was just, what, a red convertible?
Yeah, both of them. It was just a, one of them, I think, was a red car. One of them was just a black car. And
how do you change from Bruce Wayne's car to the Batmobile? You put the top down.
Yeah. You know, and they didn't have like the Batarangs or in, they did have the Batcave, which didn't have, it had a desk in it. I didn't have any of the super, you know, the big trophy room or the big computers or anything like that. Like in, you know, later, would show up, but you know, they didn't use the Batcave in the serials. It was a place for them just to say he had, and to run through on his way out to the car, you know. The second Batman serial, the first one, he looked pretty good in. The costume looked pretty good. The second one, not so much. Different actors playing Batman and Robin. Robin was older. The bat suit looked pretty awful in that.
That's the one with the floppy ears?
Well, it's the one where the ears go, like, straight out from the side of his head.
Yeah, it looks more like a hyperactive Daredevil. If you guys haven't seen this, you can Google Batman 1949. Very simple. These things pop up, and they don't look like bat ears. They have devil horns.
Yeah, yeah, and they're going from out from the side of his head and to the right and the left. The first one, they kind of went up and curved in slightly, you know, and it worked a little better, you know, and the guy was a little more fit, I think, than the second one that played him. And Robin was the right age in that serial, you know, for the time in the books. In the second serial, he was a bit older and didn't look quite as right in the Robin suit and next to Batman. Mm-hmm.
Well, plus he's got that huge Lone Ranger style mask.
Yeah.
granted, Robin's mask is a trick to pull off anyhow because it's easy to draw.
Yeah.
It's tough to make and cut your face.
You know, even with the Batman one, the second one where it didn't look as good, it was still, you know, it had Bruce Wayne, Dick Grayson, Alfred. He was rich. They had a Batcave, you know, and except for the budgetary limitations of where they couldn't have the Batmobile and all that stuff, it was still faithful. They didn't change a whole lot.
Batman is an extra-legal vigilante, but he kind of has the cooperation and support of the Gotham police.
Yeah.
And they're treating him as, you know, a guy who has the power to move outside the law.
Yeah,
and he can scare the criminals because they're cowardly and superstitious. That's why he has this theatrical costume. They're not treating him as a rich lunatic who dresses up like a flying rodent.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, you know, and yeah, I think actually I want to say maybe in the first one he was secretly working with the government.
Well, given the release date of the serial, that would not surprise me.
Yeah, because the villain was Dr. Daka, the evil Japanese scientist.
Yeah, sure. It's the war, so it's easy to make all your villains fifth columnists or something like that.
Yeah.
It's a perfectly natural thing to do.
Yeah, so there's your ground in reality of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But still staying faithful to the source material.
Sure.
It can be done.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, I mentioned this to you offline, but the three rules I have for all these movies, personal rules. Number one is stay faithful to the source material. Okay, the second one is be accessible to a wide audience. So what I mean by that is Easter eggs are fine, you know, and the more you can cram in there for the fans, that's great, so long as they don't become major plot points that go over the head of a bigger audience.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So because you want to sell as many tickets as you can.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
if this thing becomes too esoteric, you know, only 400,000 people in the entire country are going to understand this movie, it's going to flop.
Yeah.
And kind of like Zack Snyder's Watchmen. And then
which was actually really good. It was really faithful and really good.
I love it.
You go ahead and finish because I got my own thoughts on that. And we kind of agree on most of it, but go ahead.
Okay. And then the third one is just tell a good story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That's not hard. You've got almost 80 years of examples to go by. You know, we could go all the way back to Crimson Avenger or Dr. Akutu, whoever the first costume hero was in 35, 37, something like that, before Superman.
I think the Phantom was one of the first.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm thinking right, I think I read that somewhere that the Ghost Who Walks was actually one of the first, if not the first, you know, Long John, lack of a better word, costumed heroes.
That makes a lot of sense because you look at who else his contemporaries were, the Shadow, Doc Savage. Those guys didn't wear costumes.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I agree with you completely on just about all of that. I mean, you got to, I'm all about being faithful to the source material because that's the core fans. Trying to appeal to the broadest audience and diluting the original character to where it's unrecognizable, what's the point of even calling it by its name anymore? You know, like the Punisher movie, the Dolph Lundgren Punisher, they could have called it anything and it still would have been as enjoyable a film, but it didn't have
Ten to Midnight too.
Do what? Oh, Ten to Midnight. Yeah, exactly. You know, but if you,
Bronson is the Punisher, right?
Pretty much. He was the Punisher without a costume, man. I mean, exactly. But if you, and Deadpool proves this, if you stay true to the source material, especially these days, and maybe not so much in the 80s and the 90s, but if you stay true to the source material, Watchmen is the exception because nobody knew those characters to begin with.
Yeah, that's the point I was trying to make. You know, I did it rather closely, but
yeah, but everybody knows Spider-Man, everybody knows Superman, Batman, and if you put Marvel on it or DC, people are going to go see it these days no matter what. So why don't you stay true to the source material? You're an appeal to your core audience who will go see it repeatedly.
Right.
And will tell all their friends, and their friends are like, well, he likes that stuff. He should know whether it's good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
Word of mouth advertising on it will get more people to come or not. And it's like the Superman Batman versus Batman movie we'll get into later on. It's getting really mixed reviews and leaning towards it's not very good from most of the ones I've read.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's going to turn people off from seeing it. If people who are into it say, I'm not going to go see it, then that might turn a couple people off. But just because it says Superman and Batman, people are going to go see it regardless. So why not make it true?
Right, exactly. Like you said, Watchmen was it was so far into its own mythology, right? Well, it shouldn't have had any baggage, okay? Nobody comes to the film except the people that have already read the graphic novel.
Yeah.
Nobody comes to that film with a bunch of preconceptions. And you are completely immersed into this world from the get-go. And in a self-contained unit, it should have been great.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, people are going, well, it's not Superman. It's not Batman. Well, this Night Owl guy kind of reminds Batman, but he seems like a loser. Well, that's the point.
Yeah.
The point is, what does this lifestyle actually do if these existed in a real world?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think Watchmen was almost too good for its own.
Yeah, it was. It was too good and too smart for the audience that it was presented to.
It was the same thing as a comic. So.
Yeah, exactly. Because it is. I mean, it's an enjoyable film. It's damn good. But it's a downer of a film,
yes.
Which you don't want out of your superheroes. But apparently nowadays people do. A la Man of Steel and, Batman versus Superman. They're both not happy, fun superhero films, but we'll get back to that. I don't want to go grumpy old men on it and then just bitch about it. Back in my day. But after the serials, though, getting back to that, there was a long period where there wasn't much until television, we had the George Reeves Superman show, which was fantastic. For what it was, and fun to watch, and still enjoy. And Superman acted like Superman. His moral makeup of who he was as a character was true to the book.
Yes.
And even when you get to the Adam West Batman show, as campy as that was, it's genius for what it is and the time it came out. And people can argue, oh, it sucked. Oh, it was goofy. Well, yeah, it was goofy on purpose, but it was goofy smart. Smart about it, but at the very core of who the character was still Batman. He still did right for the right reasons, and he wasn't unrecognizable as he didn't do things Batman wouldn't do outside the context of the story, of it being campy,
Correct.
I mean, yeah, he had bat shark repellent, and everything was labeled, but other than that, he didn't go out and kill a bunch of people, or he didn't start to do a cooking show, something.
It's an era where Batman was still the world's greatest detective and not the world's greatest face breaker. And yeah. I'll blame Frank Miller for that. But
yeah, exactly. Exactly. Dark Knight Returns really was the turning point where things started to get, well, people will say realistic, or where comics grew up, I've heard too. Which, six of one, half dozen the other on that. But, you know, the changes they made in, because that's kind of what are the main thrust of what we're talking about, I think, is the changes they make from comic book to screen. The George Reeves thing, they didn't have any of the stuff like the extra stuff, like Crypto or Fortress of Solitude or anything like that. They did have, in the first episode, they did have Krypton and had his origin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they touched on that, but after that, it was just basically Superman having an adventure.
Right.
You know, and that's cool. I mean, it's just like, boom, bare bones Superman. Here it is.
And his adventures are grounded in the reality of the time, okay?
Yeah.
With the limitations of a television budget in the 1950s. Okay. He's not going to be fighting Brainiac and characters like that. He's going to be stopping corrupt lawyers and greedy landowners.
And arsonist mob. And mob guys.
Yeah. Right, which is basically what he did in the early 30s before the concept of the supervillain came along.
Yeah. You know, and they
and
say
he does it.
Yeah.
He delivers a moral lesson to the kids at the end.
Yeah.
You know, I learned something today, Superman. Very good, Timmy. You know.
Yeah.
That was wholesome, and it's fine.
Yeah, you know, and people say, well, Superman's too powerful. You can't write a good story because he can do anything. Well, he could still have the same powers in that show, and they managed to thwart him and keep him busy for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they thought about what they were writing and they made it work around his powers.
Yes.
So if they could do it back in the 50s, you know, there's nothing saying they can't do it today.
That's right. But you know, that's not what people want.
Well, I always say, well, you got suits and power, and I'm talking business suits, not superhero suits, as the powers that be who have no concept of the characters of what they are, who they are, what they stand for, what they do, how they interact at all, making decisions about these movies. And even the comics nowadays, with the new 52 and the Marvel, all these reboots and stuff, you got a bunch of 12-year-olds writing these stories.
What it feels like.
Yeah, and my, I always say, I can just picture a couple of these new writers over the last 10 years are sitting around a table going, hey, wouldn't it be cool if? Yeah, let's do it! And then they write the story, and then about 20, 30 issues later, they have to reboot it because they've kind of written as far as they can write with that concept. You know, they don't think in the long term, they don't fit it, there's no fitting into continuity, there's no making anything happen. It's just like, this would be cool to see him do this.
Many years ago now, I'm dating myself, but it's been a long time since I even read it. But Peter David used to have a column in the back Comic Buyer's Guide called But I Digress.
Ah. Uh-huh.
And he was writing a particular column about, you know, remember when all those broke away from Marvel to form Image Comics? McFarlane and Liefeld and so on.
Yeah.
And Peter was having a kind of a friendly online, it wasn't online then, kids. You actually had to, you know, write stuff down on paper. But in the press, kind of a bantering back and forth about the value of a comic book writer versus the artist. And, of course, a lot of these Image guys were saying, well, you know, the comic is a visual medium, so we create all this stuff on paper. The writing's not that important. It's because that kind of, you know, the story carries itself. And Peter's like, well, yeah, because, you know, the script that I write is Wolverine meets Sabretooth in the woods. They fight. Knock yourself out. 22 pages. That's what some of these movies feel like. Modern comics feel like.
Oh, it is. It is. You know, and not everybody, I'm sorry, but there's only one guy that could write the story and be the artist, and that was Jack Kirby.
Well, Hail to the King, baby.
You know, exactly. I mean, and these guys, and Image, when they chose the name Image for those comics, they chose the right name because that's all it was about. Yes, all it was about was the image of what it looks like, because they didn't last very long. I think Savage Dragon actually still going on. That might be the only one.
It's the only one.
You know, but the rest of them came and went, you know, flash in the pan. They were all really hot for a short period of time. And
well,
where
Jim
are they now?
Jim Lee's Wildstorm operation got bought by DC.
Yeah, yeah. And Jim Lee's...
Didn't they reward him with a court office?
Do what?
Doesn't he have a corner office? Isn't he like co-publisher?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's like the big man in D.C., and he redesigned all the costumes and everything for New 52. And consequently, they all look like crap. I mean.
And that's, you know, Jim is a good artist. Okay. But in terms of vision, I don't know. What is New 52? It's all high notched necklines and.
Yeah, and the sleeves coming on. No skin exposed, you know. Even the sleeves on Superman come down over to his knuckles almost. Everything is the high priest collar. No trunks on any of the outfits. They're all onesies. Tons of extra lines and seams that don't make any sense. Not from a design point of view, and not from, if they want to say it's more realistic, not from a realistic point of view.
Yeah, but that's just his version of life of pouches, I think.
Yeah. Oh, and a lot of, if they have a cowl, they have like a chin piece on it, too.
Mm-hmm. All right, so back to the movies.
Yeah.
what's the next thing that comes along? Is it Anthony Lee Crosby, Woman in 74?
I believe so. Yeah, I think so. We had the Batman in 66. There were some failed, you know, pilot TV things in there that we don't even need to go into. But yeah, the Wonder Woman comes along. And
that's an odd one because it was based on what, for some reason, they decided in, what, 68 or 69 that Wonder Woman, all the Amazons are going away. And they're actually moving Paradise Island to another dimension. And Wonder Woman elects to stay behind, but as a consequence, she gives up her superpowers, and she goes ahead and gives up her costume, and she starts wearing a white jumpsuit and trains in martial arts, and those were the Emma Peel years.
Yeah, I was going to say, she becomes Emma Peel there, yeah.
Well, basically, I would have said, if you could imagine Pam Grier as Wonder Woman, I would watch that movie.
Wonder Woman, sucker.
Yeah.
You know, hey, speaking of like Pam Grier, you know, Phyllis has often said that except for the you know, Wonder Woman is a white character, she says the perfect person for Wonder Woman for her would be Gina Torres from Firefly, because she's a very statuesque, regal-looking woman, and she looks like she could kick some ass.
Well, you know, there's a lot of flack in the cosplayer community now. I know you hate that word, but a lot of flack in the cosplayer community about, you know, this crap of, well, you should only play your body type, okay?
Yeah.
If you're white, you can be anybody because comics is geared toward white folks. But if you're a person of color, you know, you're limited to the Falcon and Black Lightning and Black Panther and characters like that, which is nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But when you really think about it, very few exceptions. There's no compelling reason for a lot of these characters to be white in the first place. There's no reason for Wonder Woman to be white. I mean, she's of Greek descent.
Yeah.
Any kind of Mediterranean complexion work, and that includes Egyptian.
Yeah.
There's no reason for Superman to be white. I mean, they were Black Kryptonians. They were segregated to Vanslo Island, but
he could be purple. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Well, what was it? Brando wanted him to be a glowing rock. You know that story from Superman, the movie?
No.
Apparently Brando was like, well, has anyone ever seen a Kryptonian? How do you know they're human? Well, because he wanted to do the voiceover off screen or something.
Oh, jeez.
It's like, well, the Superman that comes to Earth looks human, so I'm pretty sure the other Kryptonians would look human. There's your answer. But... yeah, there's no reason for Superman to be a white guy. There's no reason for Hawkman to be a white guy.
Yeah. I mean, it's because the time that they were created and written,
yes,
that was just kind of the standard, and they were written by, you know, white guys. And my only thing, I agree with you, there's no reason in today, but my only gripe with that is that because they are, they've already been created.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And
you're talking about Johnny Storm.
Yeah, you know, and Nick Fury Sam Jackson. I mean, I'm a big Sam Jackson fan as anybody. I'd watch Sam Jackson, you know, read the phone book. You know, I mean, he's just that cool. But
yes,
until the Ultimates did that alternate Marvel universe where the heroes really didn't have any redeeming qualities.
Cap is a face kicker.
No, he's just a grunt in that. You know, he's just no. You know, he's not Cap, but
no,
until they did that, Nick Fury was always a World War II veteran. He was a white guy with the eye patch and grizzled Arlie Ermey kind of guy. And they changed him.
Now you've got me picturing Arlie Ermey as Nick Fury in the Avengers. I got a process of that.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yes.
Sam Jackson does what he does, does a good job with what he does with it, but, you know, and they did make the character like that in the comic before the movie, so I give him a little slack on that. But when they just change characters to different ethnicities just for the sake of doing it, just to say, look how diverse we are, I kind of think is actually an insult to that ethnicity.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, it's instead of writing a new character that, say, is Hispanic or is black, they take one that's already been established as a Caucasian character, and then they change it to a different ethnicity. It's like it's an insulting so far as to say that, well, we don't think this character can make it, say, a Hispanic character or a black character, so we're going to take an already established white character and make them black.
Well, you know what the new one is?
What's that?
Iron Fist.
Oh, yeah, I heard that.
Iron Fist is a Caucasian character, but that's because Danny Rand is a Caucasian character. Danny Rand is not the first or only Iron Fist. He's the latest in a long line of Iron Fist.
Yeah, the character is Caucasian. Now the thing I heard is they're saying, well, you know, he's a martial artist, so it's a good opportunity to make an Asian character, and they should make him Asian. And it's racist if they don't. But yeah, but that's profiling and racist if they do make him Asian. So what are you saying? All Asians, no martial arts?
Right, and that's, you know, you're caught between a rock and a hard place there, because if you make him Asian, then you're treated. I mean, you can be an Asian Iron Fist. It's great. It's not Danny Rand.
No, uh-uh.
But if you say, well, it's to say all Asian people know Kung Fu. But then if you make him a white character, it's like, well, okay, so we have the great white hero who comes in, and he knows Kung Fu better than all the Asians, you know, because he's the powerful white man.
But that's not the story, though.
That's a valid reading of the concept if you're way, 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 way back up the cheap seats and you're not even interested in the first place. But if you're in the front row where you can smell the sweat in the ring,
yeah,
you know that's what Iron Fist is all about. And if you really want to do that, put Shang-Chi, the master of Kung Fu.
Exactly. Him show up, you know?
Because he's an ass kicker.
Yeah. But, you know, you got Power Man and Iron Fist. You got the black guy and the white guy hanging out as equal partners and helping each other and all that. I mean, it's
Chuck
a good...
Chuck Norris and Fred the Hammer Williamson would have been a hell of a TV movie.
I would have watched that.
And Pam Grier is Misty Knight.
Oh, well, of course. I mean, duh.
Pam Grier would have played everybody, but that's okay.
That's right. Man.
And
yeah.
Robin is a Punisher.
And yeah, there you go. And Bronson is the Punisher. Oh man, we could go back and recast we'll have to do that, the 70s recasting of everything. That's awesome.
Absolutely. But yeah, you know, if the character's already been created, and of course we ran into this in the Bronze Age 70s kids,
yeah,
that's what it was called. And it felt like, okay, we're going to open up the characterization, we're going to include a bunch of African-American characters, you know, for equal representation. But with very few exceptions, a lot of those guys inheriting a mantle that had already been set up by somebody else.
Yeah.
You've got Rhodey as War Machine. Well, basically, he gets to be the Black Iron Man.
Yeah.
Excuse my dog. And you've got John Stewart as Green Lantern, but he's the Black Green Lantern.
Yeah.
He doesn't get to be his own character. And then you've got Black Goliath. And then that was the other thing. All the black characters, with very few exceptions, had black in their name. So even if they're wearing a mask, well, that's a brother under there, right? That's Black Lightning, and Black Condor was a white guy.
Yeah.
But Black Panther is black because he's actually an African prince.
Yeah.
And it would not make sense to put a white guy in that costume.
No. And Black Panther's a cool character. I'm glad they finally bring him into the movie, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the Falcon, man. I mean, I've always dug the Falcon, especially when he was, you know, him and Cap were dual headline in the book in the 70s.
Right.
He's a cool character, but they've never really written him, except for that one miniseries they did. They've never really done a whole lot of cool stuff with the Falcon that they could have.
No, because, you know, he was Captain America's partner. And from the context of Captain America, he's going to look at Sam as a full equal partner because he's Cap, and, you know, that's
what yeah. he does.
But a lot of people are going to look at, well, Falcon's a supporting character. You know, how come there's no Falcon book? How come there's no... how come these guys aren't getting more spotlight is what I want. I don't know.
But, you know, they have...
It's a complicated business.
Yeah, and without getting too much into the politics and the political side and the
social side,
which we're veering into... You know, I'm glad I dig the Falcon. I always have. And, you know, we talk about costumes really quick. His original costume with the V open chest and the bare arms was tough looking. Swashbuckling, you know. And then they put him in a full body suit with like a helmet type thing. And it's like, okay, so you're saying he's not as tough anymore. He needs all this extra padding and all this extra suit. A dude coming at you with bare arms and an open chest and can still kick your ass and dodge bullets and stuff, that's a badass. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. A guy armed with head to toe in armor isn't as bad as a dude without it.
Correct. I wish that, the movie Falcon was closer to at least his traditional red and white outfit.
Yeah, well, you know,
I understand why they did the thing with the wings, you know.
Yeah.
Comic books require a certain amount of suspension of disbelief, and it only works if you've bought into that fictional universe for a long time. Even if you're picking up a comic book for the first time, you know, you kind of get immersed into that. When you throw them into the movies because of realism, isn't Sam Wilson actually a mutant?
Well, I think so, with his ability to communicate with Red Wing, with his Hawk or his Falcon. But other than that, he isn't. As far as I can remember, unless they added something new over the last few years.
So the flying still comes from the costume,
is that
right?
Yeah, it's still the wings and the Wakanda technology.
So I kind of understand, you know, how they did that military technology for the Winter Soldier. And, you know,
I'll buy that. Yeah, I'll buy, and how he meets up with Cap because of the military backgrounds, you know. Okay, that works.
One of the things that does annoy me a little bit, because, you know, you only have so many origins available in the comic book, everything's a suit. Okay, Iron Man's a suit.
Yeah.
Ant-Man is a suit. And I guess that's a good thing, because if he was taking Pym particles as a pill or as a gas, that it's a bad, you know, drug message.
Yeah.
But the Falcon is a suit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Green Goblin in the Raimi movie was a suit. Doc Ock, of course, is kind of a suit. And when you start thinking about the rhino that shows up at the end of Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Oh, don't.
It's a guy in a suit.
He's a Transformer.
The Scorpion mm-hmm. shows up. He's a suit.
Yeah.
And so there's so many things that you can do, right? If you're not born on another planet or bombarded by gamma radiation.
Yeah.
Because it's a tough sell to audiences for mysticism. And I don't know how they're going to handle Black Panther. I don't know how they're going to handle Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
But you reach a point where the people are just going to go, what? No, that's stupid.
Yeah.
It's not, but you haven't sold it to the audience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they bought the radioactive spider.
Yeah. Well,
you know, and my thing is, if you set up the comic book universe as the comic book universe, then everything mm-hmm. works within in that context. You know,
I will say that's one brilliant thing the X-Men movies did, and they had it working in their favor. These guys are mutants. They're born that way. Let's move on.
Yeah. And, you know, and that works.
Mm-hmm.
Now, going back, I think we got to the Wonder Woman show in the 70s, and that was brilliant in that they set at least the first season, they set it in the 40s during World War II, where it could play more innocent and more comic booky, if you will. For lack of a better word.
Somebody hates Nazis.
Yeah. You know, you had your built-in villains. You didn't have to have super villains. And it could be more... It bordered on campy, but it was mm-hmm. it was a serious show, but it was still played a little golly gee, you know.
Yes.
And then the second season, they updated it, or the second or third season, they updated it to today, or the 70s, when it was made. And changed things around where she worked. She worked for like a CIA type agency, and they tried to have a few supervillain types show up, but nothing from the comic book. It was all made up for the show.
Yeah, and see, that's always the other thing you get into. Because of the time, the budget, and the technology, it's tough enough to pull off the hero when you have a villain.
Yeah.
It's like, this is somebody without scruples, without morals. Why don't they win? Well, we can't really actually have them killing a building full of civilians. Why not? Why do they have to get killed at the end of the movie? Well, because if they come back, it's unbelievable you could beat this guy twice because he doesn't play by the rules. I think that's the real reason that all villains get killed off in these movies.
Well, also, well, I think they keep getting killed off in these movies because it has to be some dramatic, overly dramatic ending. Their motivation for doing things, or the people, the heroes, villains, or whatever, they can't just do something because it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the villains can't just show up and just be a villain. This is one of my biggest gripes about modern comic movies and stuff. The villain has to be connected to the hero since they were children.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they have to have crossed paths and have a connection. And why? Why can't the villain just come out of nowhere and be a bad guy, a random bad guy, you know?
You accidentally cross paths.
Yeah. I mean,
they
even did it in the new James Bond movie with Blofeld. Spectre?
Oh, did they? I haven't seen Spectre yet.
Oh, it's pretty good overall, but when it gets to the point where you find out that Blofeld and Bond knew each other as children.
Oh.
Yeah. Then it...
I left the original origin of Lex Luthor, where Superboy made his hair fall. Do you know that one?
Oh, yeah. But, you know, that was... that was in the comics. That was established way back. But then they kind of threw that out, I think, after a while.
Yeah, they did. Burned through that out in 86.
Oh, you know what we forgot, though? What? The Kathy Lee Crosby Wonder Woman movie.
That was what I said. She was in a white suit the Emma Peel years. Kathy Lee, that was based on that look. And the Kathy Lee Crosby, I think, was supposed to be more geared toward the powerless Wonder Woman. Except
yeah.
that they had already taken steps in the comics at that time to backpedal on that, step away from it because of feminism. And I don't mean that like in a derogatory manner. I mean that... Gloria Steinem actually said, Wonder Woman was a role model to me. Why is she walking around in the comics with no powers?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, crap, that's a good point. So they restored her the way things were. But the movie comes out kind of like caught in the middle, like, well, we're working with six-month-old information when we wrote the script.
Yeah, it was kind of based off the Emma Peel years of Wonder Woman, but they did give her a costume. It looked nothing like Wonder Woman.
Right.
On its own, it looked kind of cool,
mm-hmm.
but she was blonde. For one thing.
It looked like Evel Knievel's partner.
Yeah. It did kind of look like that, you know. You know, that was one of the times where they did just, even as a kid watching that, when it came on, I was like, that's not Wonder Woman.
You know? Right.
It was still cool because it was a superhero in a costume, but it wasn't Wonder Woman. But
why is she blonde?
Yeah. And I think that was one of the first times where they just totally really changed things, really off the wall. I'd love to talk to somebody that was in charge back then and find out why they did. What was the decision-making process on that? Because they kept Paradise Island.
Yeah.
You know.
Inexplicably.
Yeah. But they didn't keep... And I think they kept the idea of the invisible jet. They just didn't show it. But I think
it's invisible.
Yeah. But I mean, I don't think they show her even, you know, the sitting position in the sky like they did on the TV show, you know. You see the some comedian did this thing where Wonder Woman, she's got the invisible jet, you know, can't be picked up on radar or anything. But it's like, oh, look, there's some woman in a sitting position wearing red hooker boots in the sky. You know?
Well, you know. Again, you're like, you can't defend some of this stuff. The idea of the invisible plane is cool, but yes, if they can see you. Because that was always obvious on the Super Friends cartoon.
I mean, if in the... See, I'm not that... big a fan of Wonder Woman as far as not familiar with all the mythos, and I know they've changed a lot over the years, but if they explain in the comics where it was a cloaking thing and made it her invisible, everything invisible, which I think is what it's supposed to do,
mm-hmm.
Okay, I buy that, you know.
Sure.
But just making the plane invisible and you're sitting there in a sitting position flying through the sky.
Yeah, Wonder Woman is not going to lead your stealth assault team.
I know. Other than that, after Wonder Woman, then we had, I'm not sure,
Spider-Man.
They had the Spider-Man TV movie and the TV show,
right.
Which, you know, severely, the lack of technology hurt that bad.
Oh, yes.
The webbing looked ridiculous. I mean, as far as, you know, throwing a rope out from under his arm and then a net and stuff like that. The climbing the building... with the technology they had, they did the best they could. And sometimes
the building scenes are commendable for the time.
Yeah. Some of it looked pretty good. Some of it was an actual stuntman being pulled up and, you know, faking the climbing. And some of it was him crawling around on a green screen. And, you know.
Sure, but your option there was to go back to 66 with Batman and Robin scaling the side of a building by turning the camera 90 degrees.
That's exactly, exactly. So for what they had to work with, it, you know, okay, it's passable. It wasn't bad. But then you get into the fighting and the, you know, all the other stuff. It hurt. Severely hurt, I think, with the having to shoot the webs and then having no real villains to fight.
Right, because in terms of villains, you haven't made any real progress from The Adventures of Superman, which was 25 years earlier.
Yeah, and where in the comics...
Spider-Man's fighting oil cartels and drug lords and corporate America and whatever villain of the week you can come up with. Some kind of suit.
In the George Reeves in the comics at the time that the show was on, he was fighting, you know, robbers and mobster guys in addition to some of his supervillains. But Spider-Man comes along in the 60s, and by the 70s, you know, all he's fighting is supervillains.
Mm-hmm.
The technology and then the speed at which they're filmed and all that, yeah, they just couldn't do that on TV. Now, changes in the costume, at least he looked like Spider-Man, except for wearing that big clunky web shooter on the one wrist and the belt on the outside of the costume. Now, that was done for realism factor, even though in the pilot movie, it was under the suit. It didn't show.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, you're torn there between, okay, it's realism for believability versus realism for we don't know how to do this any other way. It's a technological issue. So, you know, there are certain things you can forgive.
Yeah.
Having the external belt with the webbing cartridges, that was good.
Yeah.
The costume isn't horrible, but...
I mean, it looks like Spider-Man. It's just constructed a little cheaply.
Mm-hmm.
But it looked like the character at a glance.
I'm looking at a picture of it right now. Unless it's put on the mannequin poorly, the boots are at the same height.
Oh, yeah. He did, in some scenes, he's wearing actual real boots over the costume, painted on boots or whatever.
Look at a picture of that, too.
Yeah. And the lenses changed a lot in the, sometimes they were, like sunglass lenses, bubbly, and sometimes they were like flat, like fly eyes with holes all poked in them, like silver or white.
And again, you know, that's a tough thing to pull off with the technology of the day, but, you know, overall, it's not horrible.
No,
It's not horrible. And it was a lot easier said than Doctor Strange was the year after.
Oh, yeah, that I have not seen in years, so I can't really comment much on that. But
I caught it on YouTube, and I fast-forwarded through most of it. And I'm just saying this, you know, I think Cumberbatch has got a huge hurdle in front of him this November, simply because I know Harry Potter was a huge success.
Yeah.
The Lord of the Rings was, you know, a built-in audience. But by and large, magical characters are a tough sell, and... Doctor Strange movie was a really tough sell because, well, I don't know what we can have him fight because your villains list also needs to be magical.
Yeah.
And so that takes you further and further away from reality, yet because of the limitations of a TV movie, you're forced back into reality, so you're operating in this very, very small area of overlap that just doesn't make anybody happy.
Yeah. Exactly. They nailed it, though, with getting somebody with the name and popularity of Cumberbatch to do it, though.
Yes.
Because that right there is pulling people in who will go see it and love it, regardless of knowing much about Doctor Strange. So that was a really good move on the suit's part there. And we'll see how it turns out and how he fits into the rest of the Marvel universe.
Yeah, but after Doctor Strange, what brings us to... Now, Superman's on screen...
What?
In movie theaters in 78.
Well, before that, though, 77, we had Captain America TV movie.
Oh, no, that's 79.
Was it 79? I thought it was 77, 78.
Nope. Apparently, unless the internet lies to me, it was two movies made for TV in 79.
Oh, same year.
One early in the year and one late in the year.
Wow. Okay. It probably was. It probably was.
I thought they were earlier, too. I really did. I looked it up, and I'm like, no, they both came in 79.
Okay, so we had Chris Reeve then first as Superman.
Yes, in
theaters. On the big screen, and
on the small screen you got Reb Brown.
But but you will believe a man can fly. Now, they got a lot right with that. You know, I mean, instantly, he looks like Superman.
Sure.
And he is, I mean, he looked just like Superman, the comic. To this day, he's what most people picture when you say Superman, that image pops in your mind. The costume was beautiful. It didn't look silly.
No.
You know, he wore it well. He made it work.
Well, he did not carry himself self-consciously, and I think that has a lot to do with it, that he was not embarrassed to be playing this part.
Exactly.
Or certainly doesn't look that way.
No, he was totally comfortable being Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that, you know, a lot of that comes from him as a person, I think, you know, as who he was. He was kind of was that guy from all reports, you know. But he was written as Superman. He wasn't self-doubting. He wasn't emo about stuff. He did write because it was the right thing to do. And that's the way he was brought up.
I have a lot of problems with the film.
Oh, well, yeah.
We could talk about it at a different time, of course. But in terms of what we're talking about with the costume, the realism, and making it work is a serious invitation. It's great.
Yeah.
It's a landmark, in fact, but the story and the characterization, but that's a different issue entirely.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it does have a lot of problems and faults. There's no doubt about that.
As Clayton likes to say, Gene Hackman is in a different movie than everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, he wasn't, he really did not epitomize Luther to me.
He's the toy man.
Yeah, he's pretty much the toy man. Yeah, he was probably every bit as bad as Eisenberg comparatively to who the character is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Even though Gene Hackman was a more mature, you could buy him better as Luther because he was a more mature person, actor at the time, and it was Gene Hackman. He's a good actor, but he just didn't. It was the same thing with Kevin Spacey when they did Superman Returns. He was just aping Hackman being Luther, you know?
Mm-hmm. And what was it Tony said that, Tony Mercer said, Hackman basically got the script and said, okay. And, you know, pretty much had to interpret Luther as a character based on only what was given to him in the script.
Yeah.
Nobody said, here's some things, and he wasn't going to go out and dig any up, so.
Pretty much.
He's making it up from scratch as he goes along. Saying, well, if I was like Luther, I would do this. Wow.
Yeah. Otisburg?
Yeah.
Otisburg?
Well, my secret headquarters is in a sewer.
Yeah. What? Tell the turtles I said hello, you know?
Yeah, Superman's a great film in those terms, so it really doesn't crap on anything. In terms of visuals or authenticity or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's true to who the character is and the way he was created to be.
Yeah. Quite unlike a TV Captain America.
Yeah. Yeah, then we go back to TV, and we got the Red Brown Captain America, the first movie, which, trying to update the character, you know, put him in the real TV world, modernize him, and, I mean, I think it was... The only good move about it was saying that he wasn't the original Captain America, saying that he was the son of the original Captain America.
Yeah, that's
their out.
The latitude.
Yeah, that's their out right there. But the choice to change the costume completely, they explained it in the film that he did sketches. You know, he sketched out an idea for a costume based on what they told him about his father.
Right.
Okay, I get that, but why didn't they just make him the father's costume? Because by the end of the movie, he has the right costume.
Yeah,
except for
originally,
the helmet.
He's Evil Knievel as well.
Yeah. It's like the Evil Knievel squad.
Nothing against Evil Knievel, but Reb Brown's Captain America and Kathy Lee Crosby's Wonder Woman. It's like they were part of a touring circus troupe.
Yeah, it was like Team America, the you know, the stunt show.
Well, that's the other thing. He doesn't have the real shield. He's got that piece of transparent plastic that doubles as his windshield on his motorcycle.
Yeah, the big contact lens. Which, you know, okay, if you say it, oh, that's kind of a neat idea. You know, he pulls the windshield off the motorcycle. That's where he keeps it. Cool. You know, and that's the shield. Okay, that's a neat idea, but that's not what it was, though. You know?
Right.
And bulletproof.
It doesn't work out that well.
Yeah, bulletproof shields are clear in the real world. Okay, you know, I see where they were drawing it from, but it wasn't the way it was in the book. And when he threw it, it would like kind of wobble in the air.
Yes. So in all practical terms, it didn't really work out the way they wanted it to work out.
Mm-mm. And then the second movie, they gave him the right costume, and he did have a mask on underneath the helmet, even though he never took that motorcycle helmet off.
Yeah.
But they just had him fight, you know, old Christopher Lee, who was a weapons gun runner, basically.
Yeah.
You know, it suffers again from not having a real villain to fight.
And, you know, the suits, again, the guys in the business suits making the decisions were going, well, what have we got? Red Skull's not going to work. Nobody's going to believe he's still alive. MODOK? I'd love me some MODOK, man. I would love to see that show up in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
That would be awesome. You and Tony, man, MODOK.
But in practical terms, I mean, what Captain America villains do you have?
Yeah.
And how do you sell them to the audience in the limited amount of time that you've got to put this on the screen?
Well, and that's another thing. The TV movies were quickies, were made quick and for TV. So you got limited budget, you got limited amount of time, and what can you do with it? Well, maybe you just shouldn't have done it to begin with.
Well, and the trade-off here is some of these ideas would work with other characters, but those characters don't have the name cachet.
Exactly.
Don't have the recognition. When you say, well, okay, this is not a good idea for a Captain America movie, but work for, I just completely lost my train of thought on who you could slot in there instead, but a lesser known character.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
When Cap was Nomad for a while, who took over as Nomad when Cap became Cap again? Was it?
I think just a new Jack? Guy was
yeah,
Nomad.
Yeah, a new guy.
Jack okay. Something.
Jack something. Yeah. We remember the same guy. Okay, so it's probably a perfectly serviceable script if your hero is Nomad. But
yeah.
Nobody knows who Nomad is except for the 15,000 people that read that comic.
Uh-huh.
Or, this doesn't work as a Batman story, but it works as a Green Arrow story.
Yeah.
Or now it doesn't because people know who Green Arrow is. Green Arrow doesn't really work in Manhunter. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Manhunter, yeah. That worked in this context. But nobody knows who he is, and it's a tough sell.
Yeah.
So you water down a well-known character to fit in this crappy script, quote-unquote crappy,
yeah.
Rather than put a more naturally fitting character in that role.
Yeah. I mean, there's just trying to cash in on name recognition, which nowadays the name recognition thing, you know, works. Insofar, well, Marvel and DC both have gotten to where we're getting lesser characters out there, and as long as it has Marvel or DC on it, people are going to watch it. I mean, that Jessica Jones Netflix show,
mm-hmm.
Well, she was a recently created character, I think.
I believe you're right.
You know, I'd never heard of her before, and yeah, I learned to read reading comic books, but it says Marvel, it's a hit. You know, and it is, I haven't watched it yet, from what I understand, it is a pretty good show, but
it's
not a major character. And I tell you, the first actual Marvel movie to hit it big, we'll get on in a minute, which is a backup character from a backup feature.
Right, Howard the Duck.
No. You know, hey, on that note, we're past the hour mark here, so
okay.
Let's end this episode on that beautiful note of Howard the Duck, and we'll pick up from there. For us, it'll be just a few minutes, but for everybody listening, it'll be in 2 weeks when the next episode airs, and we'll just say goodnight for now. Thanks for listening, and if you liked what you heard, drop us a line at phantasmoad@gmail.com or on the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page. You know, write something down, drop us a line. If you want us to shut the hell up, that's good too, or or just say hey. But that's it for tonight, and thanks, Sam, for being on, and we'll see you next time. Good night, everybody.
See you guys.